advise you to get off the streets as quickly as possible. It'll soon be a war up there.
And we are, as a people, opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths.
I know for a fact.
And to secret proceedings.
Weapons of mass destruction.
I have a dream.
I take the threat very seriously.
A new world order.
Your government thanks you for your participation.
You are now listening to the world-famous Sofa King Podcast.
Please, read from sheets. I am Sofa King.
Sofa King.
Now repeat all very fast, please.
I am Sofa King.
Faster.
I am Sofa King.
No, not so fast. Loses meaning.
I am Sofa King with me, Todd.
You say funny things.
All right, welcome again to another episode of the Sofa King Podcast. If you haven't heard us before, this is your first show. We welcome you and hope you enjoy it. Oh, yeah. So that was our guest. Today, we have motherfucking Rob Van Dam with us.
That's right.
Yeah. And if you don't know who he is, go do a Google search and find out. And because you've probably been living under a rock for the last 20 years.
Yes.
Unless you're 20, you might not know.
Under Iraq? I'm not that familiar with geography. What's it? I've never been to the Mideast, by the way.
I think Iran is Iran. Under Iraq.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, Iran.
They know me in Iran, do you?
They do.
So, cab drivers tell me all the time, oh, we love you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Our intro says we're world famous, but I think Rob is more world famous than we are.
I agree.
Speaking of the intro, I bet you guys normally introduce yourselves and then your guests, and you went bam straight through the whole fucking show.
No. Yeah.
No.
We don't introduce ourselves. Nobody cares who we are.
No, they don't fucking care who we are.
They don't care.
They don't care at all.
I care, Dave. I care. Yeah,
Thank you. So and we are recording in. I just need to get one thing off my chest. I'm obviously jealous of his house because it's like a mansion that overlooks the ocean. But more than anything, I'm jealous because his toilet has more computational power than my computer.
Maybe. Wait, I haven't used the restroom.
You haven't seen the crazy toilet?
It made noises at me.
Did it?
I don't know. Yeah.
Does it have a boudoir?
Or it's got a remote control. My fucking toilet doesn't have a remote control.
Oh my God.
Erica said it was warm and she felt a presence in the room.
Yeah. She had a hard time peeing because the seat got really warm and she felt a presence. Yeah.
Wow. That's so insane.
My friend Tara Price, name drop. She was doing like she's totally going to be listening and appreciate it.
Yeah.
she was filming something at Rampage Jackson's house just like last week. And mm-hmm. she said, I'm convinced all you big fighter dudes have heated toilet seats. But actually, it's because we both spent so much of our career in Japan.
Yeah,
that would make sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That would make sense. It's a very fancy toilet, though. I'm very jealous of your toilet. I think I'm kind of scared of it.
Yeah.
Does that mean you wish you were my toilet? Because if you're jealous of it, of its position, or because that'd be weird. Like,
no, I don't want to be your toilet.
No, because
you kind of sounded like
no.
You're kind of leaning way.
I'm in the guest bathroom too.
So. Yeah. Oh shit! I don't even want to see what's in the main.
Well,
bathroom.
Look at this. Look, there's benefits here. You could be his toilet. And live with a view of overlooking the ocean.
True. I would have to. I'd have to stay in the bathroom most of the time.
The only problem is Rob would have to feed his toilet. Well,
welcome to our podcast, Rob. We told you should have listened in advance. We're
welcome
known
to the Casa de Van Dam.
Yep.
Yes. Thank you, and thank you for having us. We appreciate it. It's been fun so far.
Yeah.
So what are we going to get into? What do we got?
Well, I think we could start with we posted some stuff on Facebook and said we were coming down here, and some listeners asked some questions, some better than others.
For me?
For you.
Yes, for you.
Yes, yeah. They don't ask
our special guests. They don't care about us. No.
I'm going to start with a big one that I think might be on some people's mind, and it's from listener Jason Kupsick. And it's, what's the closest his nose has ever been to another man's junk?
I've never measured, so I don't even have different comparative thoughts.
We all measure. We just don't talk about it.
This. Oh yeah,
we've all measured.
I would imagine.
I think you're on your own.
I would imagine fairly close.
Yeah,
some of the wrestling moves.
Yeah, I think that's a
Yeah,
it's a given.
It's a stupid question, Jason.
It is a stupid question. I told you some are better than others.
What if he wants to know?
He does want to know. Here's another one. Speaking of some are more stupid than others, this is by Casey Horak, who wants to know if you prefer Coke or Pepsi. These are hard hitting questions.
Yeah, they are.
Is it what the people want to know?
Well, given the two options, I guess I would be I prefer Coke, but I mean I drink one of those about every year and a half.
Maybe. Oh wow, that is a long span.
That's a span.
Yeah,
but Coke is bad for you.
Until recently, when I discovered the root beer beer, like not your dad's root beer, which is my favorite.
Right.
Until that, I haven't had anything near a soda like in so long. It's just not part of my. And I wouldn't recommend it either for other people. I used to fill vending machines. I had a bunch of odd jobs when I was going to wrestling school.
Right.
You know.
I do.
And when I had to fill the fountain soda machines and I saw that it was this nasty syrup that got mixed in with the carbonated water and the sugar, it was like, ugh, I couldn't drink it anymore.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. I do miss the only soda I miss is Faygo Red Pop.
Yeah. Oh, we were talking about that the other day. You were really, really bummed out on that one.
I finally got to try that, and I'm just unimpressed. It's just red.
No, you wouldn't be impressed unless you grew up drinking it. Yeah, otherwise, you would drink it and just kind of be like, eh.
It's cheap soda. Like,
it's red.
It was like Fanta.
It tastes red.
Yeah.
I drink water and coffee. That's all I drink unless I'm like out at a bar and then I have a variety of liquids.
Beverages, yes.
So many listeners might not know, I've known Rob since, I don't know, third grade? Maybe. That's probably it. We go way back. We came up in Battle Creek, Michigan together, the cereal city, although now it's probably not the cereal city.
No, it is.
Oh, do they still make cereal?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know.
That's all they have, Dave.
Like, I didn't know if it all, because I had heard that it all got sent to Mexico and like, it was just kind of.
You need to go back home, it sounds like.
Look at a box of Kellogg's. It has BC right on there.
Okay.
That's all anyone knows about Battle Creek except for RVD.
How tall was Dave?
Except for Dave's World, of course.
Right.
How tall were you in the third grade, Dave? Was there ever a point you could beat him wrestling? You're like 6'1 in the third grade, probably?
He was a big dude.
I was a big dude, yeah. I was always. Because my brother's a year and a half older than I am, and I was always pretty much his height or taller, like our entire childhood.
Your brother's short though, right?
We were in this comic book. Dave, do you remember like we were in this geeky like comic book clique?
Oh yeah.
With Jeff Lake, Scott Monster.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Dang.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Dango now.
We used to go to Cricket's comic book shop downtown.
But I remember at school, for some reason, like either you or Jeff would like hold some kind of power. And I don't know if it was some game we were playing or whatever. We'd be like in the school library and like have to try to win you over or something. And you'd stand there like you are right now with your arms crossed.
He hasn't changed a bit.
Yeah, we used to play the Marvel superhero role playing game in the library.
Is that what it was?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, back in the day. And I'm proud of Rob that he has a room dedicated to geekiness here in the house with a lot of action figures, a lot of Ghost Rider. You're a big Ghost Rider.
Yeah, what is it with Ghost Rider?
Well, it was just that was my first draw towards the comic world. It was Ghost Rider 28, Evil is the Orb. And when my mom was shopping at the store, I remember looking at the magazine stands at that. Also, Conan the Savage Sword, uh-huh. But it was so violent.
Yeah, it was
violent. Dude would stick a sword right through someone's face. Like, and as a kid, I was like, whoa. And there was tits and ass in that.
Yeah, there was.
But Ghost Rider, he turned me on, and I've just always collected him. And now I'm sure I have the biggest collection of Ghost Rider memorabilia because I have everything that I know of and still. And I don't even know what I'm going to do with it now at this stage in my life.
Yeah.
I don't even have to have it. I don't know that I want to keep carrying it with me, but when there's one thing that I don't have that comes out, I feel obligated to get
it. Yeah. Right. You've got to keep it bouncing.
The idea for that room down there is inspiration. I have thoughts of writing, you know, down there, being creative, and looking at what inspired me on the way up. And
that's awesome.
But yeah, I don't make it down there as often as I would like. But big change in my life, and there's always changes and schedules. I have crazy life where I go like months without having like really anything to do, or I'll have like one or two bookings, and then and then other times I go and like really haul ass for a couple of weeks,
hammer it,
and it seems rough, but either way it's nothing like it was like when I was in WWE, and you would be working like pretty much 26 out of 30 days, you know.
Yeah, I remember, because we lost touch after high school, and it was coming up on our 10th year anniversary, or whatever they call it, reunion, the 10-year reunion.
Yeah, your reunion.
And I got back in touch with you then, and I had just started watching wrestling, because I hadn't even watched it since high school, and I saw that you had like blown up, and I was like, fucking legit, like Rob did it, like that's dope. And then I remember I had no way to get in touch with you, and I went onto your, at the time you had a website that had like chat boards, and I just like was talking to you on there, and I remember everybody thought I was like trolling, and they were like, you don't fucking know Rob Van Dam. And then you came on and was like, yeah, he does, because I mentioned the fact that, because I remember when we were in high school,
he's like, yeah, matter of fact,
because you had just started, and I remember my friend Troy, your friend Troy as well, and you used to go, and you you would hook up on his trampoline, and like we would be over probably playing Dungeons and Dragons or something nerdy, and you'd be out back like practicing your gymnastics on the trampoline, yep. And you were just getting started, and I remember everybody in high school was like, Rob's not going to be a fucking wrestler, you know, like it was just full of nothing but doubt. And I even remember that we were in front of the office, and everybody was like, no, and you had just done like your first summer of training, and I remember I wanted you to give me a pile driver, and you did. right in front of the office, and we both got kicked out for the rest of the day
in the hallway.
Yeah, right in the hallway in front of the office. That was the only time I've been pile-drived, and you were very gentle.
No
to
way,
me. Yeah. Believe it or not.
Yeah. You mean all those other dudes didn't pile-drive
no,
you?
No, nobody.
That sucks.
That was my one and only pile-drive. So, what was it that like? What sparked you? What made you want to wrestle? Like, how did that all come to be?
I would think probably the same thing that turns on any wrestling fan, you know, initially, mixed with a lot of a limitless belief in what I could do in life, you know?
Right.
Like, I just, the first time I watched wrestling was so into it. I was like, I became a really big fan, and then I was all about wrestling.
Right.
And then it was an actual seed planted in my head from a lady on the inside when we were at the Kellogg Center at a live show. And I had an inside because there was a lady there who said she was a manager with them. Mm-hmm. Looking back, you know, maybe she was dating one of the wrestlers. Maybe she was a groupie or roadie. I don't know, really. Her parents and my parents knew each other. And so when they found out I was a big fan and I was going to be at the Kellogg Center, they said, when you go over by, if you can get where the wrestlers come out, and when you see a lady, I didn't even know what she looked like. I'd never met her, but they said to scream Miss T. That was her name. So every time, like, Miss T, Miss T. And then finally someone said, Robbie. And then, you know, she got me down there. I got to meet Andre the Giant, Killer Bees, Lanny Poffo, and I think Hillbilly Jim, a bunch of the guys, you know, that were just like larger than life to me. Right now, all of a sudden, they're real. And she said to me, you like wrestling so much, you should lift weights. And when you're 18, I can get you in. And she wasn't, you know, my doorway in, but she was the one that flicked that switch on.
Right.
You got the motivation.
I don't think before that I thought that I was a wrestler. I just looked up to them like comic book heroes that I would never be able to actually touch.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Cause they're bigger than life. Like you said, you know, they're, sure. They're there. And, it's like, you know, meeting, you know, your idol. You know, you don't think that you can become that for somebody, but you know, you've turned that into real life. So
did you compete in wrestling, like collegiate wrestling or freestyle wrestling or any type of competitive wrestling in school?
So in high school, I joined wrestling to try to supplement the career dream that I had. And I found it to be inconsistent with my goals. So I quit. I wasn't in it that long because, the goal in high school wrestling, especially for our school, because we were like winning Michigan State champions. Yeah. They were so serious about it. Yeah. The kids that were the best wrestlers were really skinny, wiry kids.
Right.
They'd wear 8 shirts, make themselves sweat, take Xlax, and the coach was telling me,
"You're trying to bulk up."
Yeah, I was 165 pounds. Yeah. And they were saying you could probably get down to 137. I said, "I want to weigh 237."
Yeah.
Fuck this.
Yeah.
So I went for martial arts instead. I ended up kickboxing and taking after kickboxing, I went to every dojo that Battle Creek had to try to. Usually, it was on like a 2-week free coupon, and then I would get to know the trainer real well. And sometimes they'd let me just come in and spar or whatever, depending on where we were. Battle Creek had like 3, and then Kit Likens was my first kickboxing instructor. We met him because he had a ring in his yard, and we went and knocked on his door and said, "Dude, we have to get in your ring, man. Every Monday we throw the cushions on the floor, you know, and we watch wrestling and we do this thing. We're going to do this when we grow up." And through that, I ended up kickboxing and wrestling at his shows, even setting the ring and chairs up way before I was ever trained. I don't count that as part of my career, but and then once I actually did get trained, that in itself was like 26 years ago. So it's been a long road.
Where does like gymnastics come into play? Like, did you do that? Are you self-taught?
Just like Dave said, on the trampoline and first on a diving board and showing off on a diving board. And I had that extreme spirit. I was just showing off. So like if someone would do a flip and a half, I had to do 2 flips, and they were doing back flips, I had to learn to do a back 1.5 and
backflip 360s and all that stuff.
Well, there was a point, there's a long diving board. So I would walk and I would drop, I would like split my legs and drop down and like bounce off my thighs up into a handstand, do a handstand walk to the end of the diving board, and then like flip in.
just showing off. Yeah.
Nobody does that. You didn't have a friend like Dave had a friend that did that. We don't have a friend that did that.
See, like this, well, this sounds like my childhood growing up. And I was going to ask you about, you know, me and my friends, from junior high and high school, just loved wrestling. You know, I watched you on ECW. We would scrounge together money because we were poor, lived in a trailer park, and scrounge together $50 so that we could watch pay-per-views. Huge wrestling fans everywhere from, you know, junior high all the way into high school. We would, you know, bounce on the trampolines, doing the flips. We actually created our own backyard wrestling federation, you know, and had ropes and poles, and like we would do all this stuff. You know, we watched Mick Foley, we watched you jumping off high 20-foot balconies, you know, landing through tables, kind of our inspiration. And but we did it, we tried to do it safe and it was fun, but none of us ever actually took it on as a career. What type of encouragement would you say, you know, if like say my kid wants to be a wrestler, and a lot of people put it down, you know, because it is entertainment, you know?
Well, I mean, you're talking about somebody trying to swim upstream, and they have to know the odds of making it.
Yeah. Right?
To try to be a superstar in any field, chances are against you. So you got to be, you know, a real winner. Having said that, I can't tell anybody that they can't do anything, because I didn't have anything going for me.
Yeah.
I wasn't even a jock in school yet.
Right.
Yet I'm going to go down in history as one of the most athletically gifted wrestlers in the business.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know I was athletic, you know, until like other wrestlers started saying that in interviews. Taz was the first one I heard say that. I was like, really? Like, and you know, I've always said, for me, it's just about showing off. But I do think that whatever someone's dream is, you got to look at it like this: live your life, not someone else's. And as far as I know, you only get one chance at it.
Yeah.
So fuck it.
And you're definitely, I mean, I think another thing is, I mean, in any field that you're trying to strive in, I mean, you're going to face endless roadblocks and failures. And I mean, I think the people who really make it, it's not like you were just fucking gifted and all the gates opened and you cruised right into it. Like, you have to pay your dues. You have to know, you know, you have to have those moments where you're like, this just isn't fucking working, but something inside like just has to keep you going, you know?
Oh, for sure. I was tested many times where I was just like, what am I doing? I should have went to college, and I had a scholarship to go to Michigan State.
Right.
Yeah. And my dad wanted me to do that, but he agreed I would give this career choice a couple years, and then, you know, if it wasn't working out, I would still be able to go to college at that point.
Right.
So I had that support.
Oh, that's pretty awesome to have that.
Yeah. And I think that was one of the reasons why so many people, like when you, like we're saying in high school, like I'm going to become a wrestler. I think people were, I don't think it was just a universal, no one can be a wrestler. It was like the fucking, like Rob, like the smart skinny guy is going to be a, like, I mean, you were a fucking, you were like one of the smartest guys in the school and like everybody knew it. And all of a sudden it was like, you're going to do what? Like no one was on a college track in our high school. Like a handful of people were on that track, is it's a factory town. I mean, everybody was going to go work at Kellogg's, you know, that's, it was like going to college wasn't a common thing, and you were on that track. So I think people were just like, why the fuck would you do that?
And but for you to say that everyone knew I was one of the smartest kids in the school, that doesn't ring necessarily true to me, because I think I had like a 2.8 or something. I mean, I was a goof off. I was
right.
In second grade, the teacher that I had did think I was academically gifted and want to advance me a grade. And then I had the same teacher, Mrs. Gacina, also known as Miss Mary, because I think she got divorced. She or no, probably because Gacina was hard to say, but she did.
Maybe
the divorce was in there. Maybe not relevant to this name. But anyway, same teacher.
Somebody else.
My second grade teacher was my fourth grade teacher also, because she switched, and she could not believe I was the same kid because I was such a goof off. I was just
right.
And so my dad's theory always was that I was bored with school. It didn't challenge me because I got all A's to a certain point, and then I became an idiot goof off. So it's kind of surprising for just to hear you say that.
Yeah, no, I think it was. But I also, do you remember the great paper shortage?
Of course.
For reasons no one can fathom, I don't know how long you did this, a year, 2 years, like all of our teachers had lined paper. Yeah, all our teachers had lined paper on their desks, and you could just, you know, take a pinch of paper whenever you wanted to. And Rob kept doing it.
A pinch turns into
he would just do it like on it, like every class, he would grab some paper and he would go out and he would put it in his locker. And it's Michigan, so it's like a legit locker. It's like a 6 foot tall. You need to be able to put your boots and a jacket. And he filled the entire locker was just paper tall, like for no reason. It was just full of paper. And then the school went broke and we had no more paper.
Yeah.
And then Rob got in trouble because everyone thought he stole all the paper because his locker was completely
full. He started selling it, you know, like 25 cents a sheet, guys.
Didn't they confiscate all the paper and take it back?
Yeah. Yeah. But it was a contest between me and my partner in crime.
Oh, was it? I didn't know. I remember you doing it.
He took his shit home. So when he heard the heat was coming down,
stuffing it in his backpack.
They were making announcements on the intercom at school, asking us, you know, if we can to bring paper from home. It was on back order. Yeah. They were fucked.
And he's taking it. And he's taking it home, not bringing it in. Yeah,
I had 4 feet of it in my life.
Yeah, that's funny. Wow.
So the other thing that you've been doing recently is stand-up comedy. And I'm curious, like what got you into that? Like, what was the, like, what made you think, oh fuck, I think I'm going to try that out. What was the,
I think I always, you know, like when we grew up, there was Gary Fields Comedy Court.
Right? Yeah. Oh, remember fuck. That? Yeah. I do remember that. Yeah.
I think since then, like I knew someday I'm going to go up like on open mic night or something like that. And I never did that, but I got invited to a comedy show where they kind of used like a wrestling theme, like with they would announce the comedian coming in, like it was a contender and, square off. It was, you know, kind of
okay. Yeah, yeah.
So, but when I went to that, some of those guys were so bad, so bad. and when they asked me if I wanted to go up, you know, I did. Booker T was actually at my first time going up on stage. He was like, "Man, you did better than a lot of those guys up there, man." And it was like I just felt like I could do. I wanted to write and to deliver my expressions. So right away, when comedians were saying, "Hey, if you want some help with material," I'm like, "Dude, fuck off. How are you gonna express me?"
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
No, if you want to bounce with you, so dude, fuck off. Yeah. So I started by making fun of the other comedians, you know, and shit like that. And then I did other ones just talking about pot. And recently I did this comedy tour, which is my first. Usually I just do it in LA and Vegas because I live there. And it's not something I'm trying to pursue. You know, I mean, can you imagine someone trying to tell jokes for a living?
Yeah.
That's funner when I say that in the clubs when the comedians are there.
Yeah.
But But anyway, this tour came along that worked out, and I did St. Louis and something in Ohio, something in Pennsylvania. But I did an hour and 15 minutes, and then I did an hour every night after that. So,
oh wow, that's pretty good.
I'm this nervous when I'm on stage. Like, everyone's always surprised at just how comfortable I am. But I'm like this.
Yeah, that's because you smoked 3 pounds of weed before you got on there. Or
is that whatever makes me
and 3 gallons of alcohol.
But I warn the people that my sense of humor is what other comedians consider intelligent comedy. So I warn them, if you don't think my shit's funny, that's on you.
If you don't think it's funny, you're stupid. So, I have seen a trend in that, though. I saw something, Jake the Snake was doing some comedy.
I actually started doing this in 2006. So when I did it, I didn't know of any other wrestler doing it.
Yeah.
I don't know if they did or not. But a lot of the other guys, what they do is they tell wrestling stories. I saw Piper do it, and of course, Mick Foley.
Yeah.
And that's not what I do at all. Like, people don't know what to expect, of course. They only know character on TV,
right?
But when they come to see me, I actually do stand up, you know.
Oh, wow, that's awesome!
Like for instance, I went and saw this motivational speaker, right? Because you got to get energy wherever you can. And I just sat right there in the crowd with everybody, and he was up on stage and he said something that really was profound to me. He said, "Try this, live every day like it's your last, because you never know when you're going to be walking down the street and bam, get taken out by a bus." I felt inspired.
Yeah.
I mean, I stood up in front of everybody. I said, "Dude, try this. The sidewalk, man."
I was waiting. I was like, "What's about to happen?"
So that was the motivation. Yeah. That's good.
That is funny.
Is that a true story, or is that just that's a joke you wrote?
That's my idea.
It's funnier. I'm not your demographic. It's funnier if you act like it's a true story.
As long as you buy a ticket, dude. Yeah. I've been known to motivate and inspire. I had this wrestler, he was young, getting in the business, and he was really concerned about his engagement to his fiance, right? And I had a long time marriage, so they looked up to me as someone that could tell him how to make that work, you know? And he was like, "Dude, how do you do it? Like, how can you be faithful to one person when you're traveling all the time, all around the world, like in the spotlight, having pussy thrown at you like every night?" And I said, "Well, you're going to learn a lot about yourself and your own values right here." I said, "Be honest with yourself when you answer this. Have you seen the wrestling fans?"
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Speaking of wrestling fans, it's like, I'm curious how you, like, I couldn't do it. I'm a very reclusive person.
Very.
Like, I don't have a social life. I have an antisocial life. And it's like when you and I'll go someplace, it's like everywhere we go, you're just mobbed by people. And is that still cool? Like, is there a point where this is oh fuck, or is it always what do you make? I don't know what I would do.
Is it
the
norm now?
Yeah, it is. It just is my life. So I'm used to it. Mm-hmm. I look at it like love. I get a lot of love all day, every day. The amount of people that spot me doesn't equal up to the amount of people that watch wrestling. It equals up to the amount of people that have watched wrestling for the last 25 years at any point in that time.
Because
I've impacted lives to a point to where people can come up. They haven't seen me in 15 years yet. You know, I stand out and I look relatively the same too.
Right.
Yeah.
And for those reasons, I'm spotted all day, every day. And it's all good. I mean, you know, I don't want to shake someone's hand when I'm eating a hamburger.
Right.
You know, and that does happen sometimes. And sometimes I can get a little freaked out if I walk in somewhere. Like, I went to go to Costco the other day because someone told me that was a good place to get something I was looking for. And it was so crowded. when I went in there, I guess I had like some, it wasn't a full on panic attack, but I felt like really nervous. No
anxiety.
I had an anxiety about being around that many people.
Right. Yeah. Right.
But it was even more of just having to like, wait, I can't walk. They're telling me how fast I can walk. They're in front of me controlling my speed.
Pushing behind you.
All of that together. Yeah. And then, you know, and actually when someone did spot me, it was actually calming, you know, cause it was it was like, oh, you know, someone in my world, hug me, hold me, make me feel safe.
And you just made them feel uncomfortable. You know? Yeah. What's happening right now?
And for the record, everybody feels like that in Costco. No,
yeah. Well, you especially. Yeah. I would just carry on a ski mask with me, and I get there, and like, a lot of people put the ski mask on.
Yeah.
Like, see what happens.
They that's Comic Con
yeah.
shit.
Yeah. Because I think of the first time it dawned on me, like, how intrusive that must be on your life. You and it was actually at your old house. We went to buy shelves that you could put Ghost Rider figures on in your study, and we went to Home Depot, and you had like a list of all this stuff that we were going to need to hang the shelves. And I remember it was the entire trip was basically me going back to where you were standing, signing autographs to see what was on the list next. And then I would go get it and come back and put it in the cart, and you were still signing autographs, and I would go get the next thing and come back and put it in the cart. And I was just like, oh damn, this is like, and then you actually told everybody that I was a wrestler. That was when I had dreads, and they asked what my wrestling name was, and you told them that my wrestling name was Papa Chubby.
Wow.
Which I thought was very quick.
And Dave, that's how you get new nicknames. Papa Chubby.
Yeah, Papa Chubby.
Did you take a pile driver for him?
Years previous. Oh. not at the Home Depot, no.
You should just bring autographs with you, and then if someone comes up to you, just hand it to him and keep walking.
It's like folded up. It's just folded up in his pocket. He unfolds it.
No, I used to do that when I had the comic store. I would have business cards pre-signed and just hand them out to promote the store. But usually people want pictures nowadays.
Yeah. That's funny. There was another comment on Facebook. I don't know. Carrie Ray Wobey.
I don't think I saw that one.
It says, it asked about Rob Van Dam. She said, who? And I was like, what? Go to his Wikipedia.
She's probably young is why.
No, she's an older lady. Go to the Wikipedia. And I'm actually, and Brent mentioned this before, when we looked you up, the Wikipedia is
yoked.
Yeah. I mean, you have a huge Wikipedia just about everything.
Research like
done.
Nikola Tesla, Elon Musk. You have a 33 page Wikipedia.
Yeah. It is impressive.
It's the great paper shortage of SWAT PC. When I tried to print it out, I was like, dang.
Yeah. So
before you go there, I can't comment on the time I went back in time and met Nikola Tesla.
Yeah. Right.
Stole his Wikipedia.
Changed everything.
That is online, by the way. That's a true story. I got asked about it in an interview, and I didn't know what they were talking about. And so they did. They said, "Okay, whatever." Some crazy fan, and the caller there goes, "Why are you afraid to talk about it, man?"
Oh, he's serious on it.
So I looked it up, and
so they think you went back in time.
You can talk to Nikola Tesla.
What happened? It said was I was on my way to an arena in Philly, and I got lost, and I stumbled upon this time machine, and I went back in time, and I met Nikola Tesla, and he told me, and I can't remember the rest.
That's because you went back right at that point.
How do you feel
about time travel? What's your take on it?
Well, I mean, we're all moving forward, and that's probably the direction that we should keep going. But I'm waiting for the teleportation app for the phone, and I already know how they're going to do it, because right now I can take a picture of you and I can send it to my friend in Japan. Like, bam, he can get it like instantly and look at the same thing, the photo. And we're going to learn through that technology. We can send audio, and now we can send video. We're going to learn to send, you know, like
people.
And we might start with like a piece of bread, something of a simple
something small. Yeah.
Eventually people.
That's an interesting start.
I just go straight to people. Like if the first one gets fried, we're overpopulating anyway, so we're good. So
it actually says on Reddit that you claimed you once stumbled across a time machine.
Yeah, that's
what it says. Yeah. There is a Reddit conspiracy comments.
Wow.
And it says pro wrestler Van Damme claims he once stumbled upon a time tunnel.
What did he tell me though?
When I try to go to the page, it says page has not cannot be displayed.
That's because they went back again and deleted it.
It's a time war.
Yeah,
there's a time war right now. Going
on. The Berenstain Bears effect is happening
right
now.
That's right. Yeah. On a one serious note that a couple of listeners posted is they were they wanted us to ask your thoughts on like CTE and concussions, and it was actually something I never like. I always hear about that and I instantly think football, and that's kind of where my brain stops, like in that realm. I mean, is that like a big concern for wrestlers now?
Oh, geez.
Like,
are you kidding me? Yeah. In fact, it was with us maybe first. I'm not really sure who first, but it was actually do you remember Chris Benoit?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
So they ended up looking at his brain and found out that his brain was consistent with that of a 70-some-year-old man with Alzheimer's, and it was because of the protein deposits that Alzheimer's puts on your brain that concussions also do long term. Wow. Yeah, and Chris Nowinski, he's a good friend of mine. He's so smart. He's a Harvard graduate. We were always like, dude, what are you doing in wrestling? But he had a concussion or maybe a couple, and it ended his career. Like, bam, everyone gets affected differently. And then he opened up the studies in Boston, and now he's looked at so many athletes, and he's made all these comparative studies where long-term history of concussions lead to a pattern of behavior where athletes get they act like they're not themselves. They have behavioral differences, sure. Depression, stuff like that.
Yeah.
A lot of them end up with suicide. But when they haven't been able to look at their brain until they're dead, you know, they're working on that.
Right.
I heard maybe they have a way now that they're coming through with. But when they look at all these boxers, wrestlers, football players, of course, but they find these commonalities. So like I donated my brain to this study like way back, like I don't even know, it was 2007
right
long time ago, and my spine, and I do these annual studies. I've had hundreds of concussions.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah,
hundreds.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. And I don't know of any lasting effects personally. Now, a lot of my peers, they've got no problems, you know, coming right up with symptoms right away. Like, oh yeah, sometimes I just like space out, or sometimes I see stars, or some people get headaches or whatever it is. A lot of my friends say that they know that they're fucked up from concussions. Personally, I'm not. And I've had a theory, and I ran this by Chris Nowinski years ago. I said, look, studies show that the THC, the active ingredient from marijuana, helps delay the Alzheimer's, and they were showing that maybe it could even help fight off, not only prevent, but actually they were studying all this stuff, but for sure that it would prevent staph off. The tau plaque protein that sits on the information highways in your brain. And it's exactly, it's what Alzheimer's does. And also, since it's the same thing concussions are doing, and the pot is helping Alzheimer's, isn't it possible that the THC could be protecting the brain from the damage? And I told Nowinski about this, that I wanted to do a study. And he told me I would need so many hundreds of thousands of dollars to even get this started.
Right.
But now the NFL is all over it, and they're considering letting the football players use cannabis to protect their brains to prevent damage. Yeah. And by the way, the government, although they still today, the feds have it listed as a Schedule 1 controlled substance, meaning completely non-medicinal, they hold the patent on the medicine when we do create it to use marijuana as a neurological protectant.
Oh, wow. And you, I know you're definitely a big legalized pot advocate. Have you, like, because I know when they were doing the vote in Florida, you were down there and stuff. Like, what's the, do you think that's going to happen nationally? Do you think it's still just going to be state by state?
I'll give it 4 years, and I think I'm being generous. I think it'll happen before that. There's too much going, like right now we have 24 states with medicinal programs, and plus the District of Columbia, and for recreational, the District of Columbia, and currently 4 states plus a city in Maine. And in November, it's looking like at least four more states, maybe seven, might vote it through recreationally to treat it like alcohol. And just on the numbers alone, they're going to mandate a federal change if something else doesn't happen first to cause a reclassification, like a lawsuit. There's so many lawsuits against the feds because they've blocked testing on the marijuana, but then they refuse to accept new information. And that's a problem. And the more people know, the more morality is going to win, because we have over 50% of people that think it should be legal, and everybody knows that it has medicinal benefits.
Yeah. Do you think the feds are going to lose money if they legalize it?
It's not.
Is that what it's over? Or what do you think?
It's not just the feds. It's the world leaders. Yeah. Everybody asks me, like, why don't they just realize how much money we'll make if we tax it? It's okay. The state will make maybe hundreds of millions, but the
Colorado, for example,
the one percenters will lose billions. The reason that it was outlawed way back in 1937 was because, well, it interferes with alcohol and tobacco big time. It interferes with cigarettes. It interferes big time with pharmaceuticals. You know, pharmaceuticals are so big. And it's been said that if we utilize the plant, the marijuana plant, that it could replace up to 80% of pharmaceuticals. I don't know if you know, but the United States uses 75% of the world's pharmaceuticals with 5% of the world's population. It's huge.
Horrible.
Then we talk about fuel. You know, Henry Ford wanted us to be able to process our own hemp seed oil and use it in cars that were made out of hemp, and then we wouldn't even need. But you know, Rockefeller didn't want that. Hearst didn't want you using the annual crop of hemp over 20-30 year old big oak trees that he's making money on and replacing paper. And this is the reason that the tax money will never equal what the one percenters are going to lose financially. That's totally the reason that it was prohibited. The reason it still is today. But again, I believe and I know that morality is going to win.
Well, do you think that the big pharmaceutical companies are just going to move in on it?
Probably so. And that's something that a lot of the culture of current cannabis users don't want that, because they're concerned of losing control of the integrity of the product. And yes, I mean, big cigarette companies already have all the patents and everything. They're ready to start rolling their own because they know it's going to be legalized.
Right.
And the product will be compromised, but I believe in baby steps. I think a step in the right direction is what you do to an extent.
I mean, I just picture it being like alcohol. I mean, I think it would have to become a thing where a lot of big companies are growing a bulk of the product. You know, it's like, if you look at beer, it's like Bud Light is the number one beer in the world, sadly, but it's like, it's not good. And there's a whole bunch of really good beer out there that you can get. You know, I think that might be what'll happen. But
whereas a lot of people aren't, you know, are making their own alcohol at home, people will still be growing cannabis. Then you wonder, like, are they going to start really cracking down for control? And that wouldn't be good.
Right.
But that's the thing too. We had Prop 19 out here. I went to the colleges to try to spread the word and then spoke to the students about it. And there was a big argument over which is better, the current Proposition 215 that protects patients or legalizing it recreationally. And there was a lot of differences on how the current patients would be giving up some rights, like the age goes from 18 to 21, for instance. Now all of a sudden you're smoking with a 20-year-old that's a minor. But that was just one of the things. It's more about what the growing and the current, you know, people that how much they can have and all that. Like, we don't want to see them really control that and really, like, put, you know, bars and around all of those areas. But I don't think that's going to happen. I don't, and even though people will grow, it's not like everybody will. I mean, look, do you grow your own vegetables in your backyard, or would you rather go to the store and buy them?
I grow them in my own
backyard. Yeah.
he's the one. Yeah, he's the one that does. Yeah, we go to the store. Yeah. Over here, we go to the store.
I got a couple tomato plants.
Yeah. What they do now anyway is the people that do grow it, you know, the same people that grew it underground before, but now they get themselves registered and now they're vendors and they sell to the dispensaries. And so, you know, they set up a system. Government wants their piece. I still say moving forward is the way to go.
Yeah, and there's going to be growing pains in anything, you know, laws and movements and things that happen. So I agree. I think it's in the right direction. And if people want to be able to smoke marijuana, that's what they want to do, then, you know, that's what they should be able to do. It doesn't, more people are killing each other, you know, drinking and driving than going out and smoking marijuana and going out and killing people. So you know, there's a big thing over the guns and, you know, cigarettes killing people, you know what I mean? So all the propaganda that's out there is just not put in the right place.
To put it in perspective, do you know how many long-term cigarette smokers die just as a direct result of the cigarettes?
And it's a lot, I know.
One out of two. Wow. 50% of long-term cigarette smokers.
It's actually linked to smoking from
it's,
the smoking.
It's because it's made of formaldehyde and all that. So, do you know how many long-term marijuana smokers die as a direct result from smoking marijuana?
I don't believe any. Probably
zero.
Yeah.
So I think if people knew that.
Yeah.
But that you have to detach them from the propaganda they were brought up with. We were brought up with propaganda.
Yeah.
We were brought up to believe that marijuana, LSD, acid were all hallucinogenic.
Oh, yeah. Fucking reefer madness. Like,
reefer madness.
You know, make you go crazy. Like, I remember, I mean, watching Reefer Madness when I was young, and people, like, still thought that, like, the stuff in that ridiculous movie was true. Like, you're going to smoke reefer and fucking
kill all see the bonkers. Do you smoke marijuana, cigarettes? Wait,
were you a kid in 1936? Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, exactly. I've aged very well. Damn. I was set back several years in high school. I just remember watching that movie, and I remember, like, a lot of, like, older people, like, didn't necessarily disagree with what was in Reefer Madness.
Right. That's what our teachers taught us. Miss A taught me that in health class.
Right.
Yeah, by the way, I recommend the musical, Reefer Madness, the musical. It's so good.
Is it?
It's
so good. You know what I'm amazed at? You remember a lot of your teachers' names.
I remember a lot of everything.
Yeah.
I'm actually, as David pointed out, I'm actually supposed to be a very intelligent person. Yeah,
The exact opposite of Brent. He can't remember anything. No, you need to start smoking weed.
I remember all my teachers' names. It's like somewhere after high school, I don't remember anything. I remember like kindergarten, preschool, all that really clear. I remember nothing from as of late.
Yeah. I had a bad childhood. I don't want to remember it.
I don't remember anything. I remember a handful of teachers' names in high school, and I don't remember.
I remember the teachers I liked.
Anything else?
The teachers I liked, I remember.
I know all the way up to like 7th, 8th grade, but then you had multiple classes, so it gets a little crazy, but I still know some of their names.
Right.
But I know every one of the teachers.
Yeah, my expectations are low from people because over the years I got transformed into a make-believe character that just says, cool, dude.
Yeah.
Whatever.
You have a couple of trademark sayings that's it.
Yeah. Add the cannabis use and people paint their own image.
He's just a pothead. Exactly. He doesn't remember anything. Yeah.
The Time Tunnel Reddit page finally loaded, so there's no conspiracy, but it says that your claim was that you went to Montauk and actually found a time tunnel where Tesla was there and said he was going to end the world by the year 2007. And then there was only two comments. One of them said, what kind of weed is he smoking? Where did he get it? Because I want some. and the other one said, Montauk, more like Amsterdam.
Oh, wow. There you go.
That was it.
How could I forget? He told me something. Oh, yeah, he's going to end the world.
I totally forgot.
Fucking slipped my mind. Yeah.
In 2007. That one,
2007.
So but if the theory
could be
is
in
true,
a time wrap, though.
Well, if the theory is true, he must have told you, and you must have prevented the world from ending
for
by 2007.
Hey. Fuck
yeah, man.
You're welcome. You're
welcome. Getting your you're getting your props here on the Sofa King podcast. This is where we just found that out.
That's
so.
Right. Day Nada, everybody.
Yeah. That's the same year you donated your brain and spine, though. So I don't know if there's some weird connection there.
Maybe it. So. In the future, they found out something. They say he saved everybody. That's right. How it works. That's you wanted right. to be a superhero? You're that's a superhero.
That's so, what heroes do.
Yeah. It's just another day in the life of Rob Van Dam. This is just, right. yeah. That's
Somebody's great. Making a new Reddit account after this. Yeah. So that. I don't know. This guy Trent. Trent. He's going to start some shit. Yeah.
Wow. So going back to wrestling, you know, how was the I want to know the transition. Like you went from, you know, I remember you, I mean, you started way back before I started watching wrestling really into it. You know, I watched when Andre the Giant was on and Bushwhackers, you know, and all that stuff. But I really, when you were in it, I was into it. And what was your transition like going from something like ECW to WWE to WCW to TNA? You know, was that your last venture that you did?
They're all different. They're yeah. all different. And it'd be like such a big, long conversation. But my last on TV that people know about was WWE. I'm still with them as far as like in their family. I have like an open door to talk to them about doing another run if and when mm-hmm. I'm inspired to do so. But yeah. It's been like 2 years almost since my last run, and I haven't felt the desire yet. But having said that, I'm still under merchandise with them. And so now I'm with WWE. I would like to finish my career being with them. You know, like yeah. a lot of fans want to see, no, go to this one because they wrestle more your style. I don't give a fuck. I mean, it's been so long since I cared about that. You know, I'm still yeah. into showing off and doing my things. But because in ECW, because I was so innovative and was always coming up with ways to top myself, you know, because that's what it was about.
Yeah.
Because of that, some people still want to expect that, you know, at this day and age. Yeah. You should come up with some new moves and show them. It's like, dude, I'm past those days. I've paid my dues
right, yeah.
over and over again. And, yeah. and I don't even, yeah, I mean, I'm like, everyone in the dressing room wants it way more than I do. So that's the issue. That's the thing. That's why I'm not there. Because, you know, it's cool. Grateful for my career. Right now, I'd rather be here in California with the door open then in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, freezing my balls off or that, whatever, right. whatever they're doing
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
No offense to Vernon Shirley. You
know. How many forks in the road do you think like decisions that move your career in one direction do you think you owe it to? Like I heard you say a story about they wanted to make you a Mortal Kombat character at one point. You're going to be a guy named Glacier or something had you made a specific decision. Mm-hmm. You think you saved your own day a lot of times? Were there a lot of those decisions you had to say no?
I mean, that's like, can you imagine? What if you would have left 10 minutes earlier? You could have got hit by that car. But who's to say? But there's definitely a lot of pivotal moments in my career that I can look at. And so that's easy. For sure, that would have been a bad move.
Right.
That was it was an offer from WCW for much more money than I was currently making at the time in ECW. They would have made me, they would have put me out in front of a lot more people with their exposure, but I would have had a mask and been seen. Right. Is a character that they created.
Right.
And that's been I've never been a character anyone created since 1991 when Ron Slinker gave me the name Rob Van Dam, which I was explaining earlier. At the time, I was the International Patriot. I was a Flying Tiger. I was Rod Zat. I was Robbie V, Robbie Z. I was like, whatever. Sabu and Sheik were my trainers. They said, just get all the experience you can, get as booked as much as you can. That's the stage I was at then. But once I became Rob Van Dam, it's always like I've owned that other when I take that with me when I go through different companies and
right
and I take
right.
it with me when I leave.
Yeah, because you see some wrestlers, they change names when sure. they change, you know, they jump ship, go over here, there's something else. You've always stayed the same. You moved into your character, they kept your character, and you just ran what you wanted to do.
Cool, dude.
Well, kind of, I guess. Yeah,
I didn't have as much say-so in WWE or as much leverage as an ECW. You know, one of the biggest differences, no one probably thinks about this, but an ECW, a lot of fans notice the style being so much different besides having chairs and no rules. Also, I never had a time limit. Like I never, even on pay-per-view, I was never told, you know, to how long to go. So it was up to me to interact and to not everyone earned that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, sure.
I earned that.
Yeah.
But when I went to WWE, the biggest difference was it was all about the time. Like you can tell me to go 12 and a half minutes, bam. And I know right where the commercial break is. I know where, you know, where something stupid's going to happen and someone's going to run down and this and that. And it's all about
timing.
The time. So
yeah.
is a for the perspective of what your job is, it's completely different.
Yeah.
Total different agenda.
Right. So what, you haven't been wrestling for the past 2 years, but I know you've still been really busy. So like, what are some of your more recent projects or things that we can look forward to that are going to be coming out soon?
Yeah. And by the way, I did have like, I think like maybe 10 matches last year. So mm-hmm. It's not that I haven't been wrestling. It's just that I've been wrestling on a much better business scale, very selectively. You know what I mean?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Because back in the day, man, you were traveling 6 days a week.
Yeah.
Out of 30 days, 26 days you'd
be. Well, sometimes. I remember one time overseas, we did 17 out of 17 days, and there was a flight, like 16 out of those 17 days, going from Italy to whatever to whatever. I didn't even know what country I was in. Then you come back, you have like one day off on a Sunday, then you do Raw and SmackDown. Wednesday, you might go home and then leave again Thursday night if you're on the West Coast, because you got to take a red eye sometimes, but otherwise Friday. And it was like that consistently. And then sometimes you do appearances on those days off you get. But anyway, I'm not doing that now. And,
right.
And so now when I wrestle, it's for outside of WWE, like a promoter in England or this guy. It's like I'm so high above market by design, because I'm not trying to be out there.
Right. You know what I mean? Right.
So like, I don't want bookers hearing this, you know, oh, maybe I can get already to wrestle at my car lot on Sunday.
Right. Yeah.
I don't even respond.
Have you done that before? Is that why that came out?
Sure.
The car lot parking
absolutely.
Lot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Take me back to 1991, 92.
Wow.
Sure.
Yeah. That's
sure. Funny. But I got to say that because like I haven't looked for work. I don't know when the last time I looked for work was.
Right.
I mean, it must have been like 10 years. I don't know. It was so long ago. Although when I went back to WWE with the return that I did after being gone for like 6-7 years, I did pick the phone up then and call them. But I had been there at Hall of Fame, and I was talking with everybody, and people were talking. So it was like a follow-up kind of thing. But anyway, besides that, though, I just always have so many offers, and 95% of them aren't going to work.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't want to insult any of my peer wrestlers, but they'll mention like some guys that they booked that are very low expense fillers on the card. They've never sold a ticket, and I'm like, and they'll email us, hey, I booked this guy and this guy and this guy, I'd love to have you on my show. They don't even get a response. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because I just know they're not even bringing in what it would take to get me.
Right.
But anyway,
right.
So I'm not doing very much of that, and you know, sometimes I do autograph signings, sometimes it's a stand-up comedy thing. But last year I did three movies. One that I did with Steven Seagal just came out a couple weeks ago, Sniper Special Ops it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have a family movie that hasn't come out yet called Time Toys to watch for. And before that was a three-headed shark attack. And I'm putting some more energy into that. Up till this point in my life, I really didn't take it that seriously. Like, I've done acting gigs, but more as an opportunist.
Right.
Because I never saw myself as an actor. I think actors really enjoy being in the skin of someone else.
Right.
You know, I don't like that. You know what I mean? Not yet. Maybe I would someday. But I think, like, you know, people would say, like, you should do like The Rock. You know, The Rock's, like, extremely talented. And, you know, he can sing and dance, be the gay guy, the tough guy, the whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not like that at all. And I don't,
right.
And so I always just kind of tried to fake it, you know, until recently. And now I'm taking it a little more seriously. I'm having a little more fun with it, a little more life experience that I can bring to it, and it helps me commit. And so because of the connections that I made from doing all those movies last year, I have like the biggest project ever coming up. That,
nice.
So I'm just, That's on me right now, and when I'm able to focus and bring that together and work on that. But I'm not in a hurry, and everything's all lined up waiting on me, and that is what I'm currently working on, although at the same time I have many, many distractions.
And you were on the X-Files back in the day too, I remember that.
How random.
I remember the X-Files.
That was our Family Feud once.
I also know that you were... we were texting each other. I think you were filming the sniper film, and in the midst of the text, you sent me like a selfie of you like dressed up like a badass sniper on the set to show me what you were doing at the moment. And I replied with a picture of the Magic the Gathering deck I was currently building.
Life goals, Dave.
Yet another
reminder.
I'm on a movie set. What are you doing? Playing Magic.
No, I wasn't playing Magic. I was designing a deck. That's even worse.
Jesus Christ. Playing some Dungeons and Dragons over here. What are you doing, Rob? Just hanging out with Steven Skull.
Sniping fools.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
fun. I always have myself spread out over a million projects, and that's something I actually hope to do less of because I don't have the ability to focus on one thing and see it through. Like over the last 10, 15 years, I've started so many things that I still plan on eventually finishing.
Right.
That's always the case.
I know a couple guys like that. Yeah.
Who? Oh, yeah. Nice, nice to meet you. Yeah.
One thing I get excited about every once in a while and have for probably 15 years is a stretch video. People that really, other wrestlers, for instance, they know me by being the guy that stretches. Like nobody else does in the business, except I'll say CM Punk has a stretch and D-Von Dudley. Besides that, people just seem to shrug their shoulders and go out that I've seen over all my time. But I get out of mat and my stretch isn't a warm up. It's an actual workout. I stretched for an hour. Way back in the day, DDP, Diamond Dallas Page, was inspired by watching me, and he started stretching, and now he's made his whole life out of DDP
out of
yoga.
The yoga.
So one project, you know, I've always wanted to be able to share my insight, and I'm going to do it. My plans are to do it with DDP's channel, do it at his production facilities through his distribution. So it's like a home run, but and I stretch all the time anyway. It seems like it'd be a no-brainer to just do it, but there's so much involved with stretching that I don't know how to actually explain what's going on between knowing what muscle you're stretching, what muscles you're using to support that so you can relax that, knowing how to get the muscle to relax when you're stretching it, besides body positioning and then twisting a certain way and breathing and balance. And there's so much that so far that's the hang up for me, is really trying to figure out how to make that so that people can understand.
And I think it's not for nothing too. I mean, you see so many professional wrestlers who have major injuries and they're always like fucked up and having to take time off to get a surgery and whatever. And it seems like you've avoided a lot of those things. And that might be one of the big reasons. I mean, if you're doing an hour stretch before you get out there, like that's going to make you're just going to be loose and not get as jacked up, I would imagine.
Sure. And I think every wrestler that's ever seen me stretch knows that. You know, what else can it be besides genetics? You know, thanks, Dad. Made me tough. I'm durable. I've had one surgery, and I actually kept going 4 years after my ACL was torn before I finally had to get it worked on.
Yeah, that's a common injury anyway, especially
and then
in
I never looked
impact.
Back. And then I never looked back. Like you didn't really limit.
Yeah, I can't. It surprises me you say that a lot of the wrestlers don't stretch. Like that is a really surprising thing. You think that that's what you would do before you go out there on the mat. You warm up, stretch, you know, do your thing, and then go out there and have fun, you know. But that's a really surprising sentiment. Anyway, you have anything else?
No. Should we do some sponsors?
Yeah.
I know we forgot to blow up.
We did.
At the top of the show.
Tell them my social media too, by the way. You keep up with all my shit at The Real RVD everywhere.
So at The Real RVD.
Yep. Yes, sir.
Everywhere. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
That's where you'll find it.
RobVanDam.com.
Yep.
True. I turned into Popeye right there.
Well, I thought you did that on purpose. No. So I was like, what's happening right now?
I needs to Instagram you. I don't Instagram you.
So,
but anyways, yeah, our sponsors are El Yucateco Hot Sauce.
Didn't we have a story?
Probably. We gave Rob Dam a box full of hot sauce.
We did.
Yeah,
we did.
I'll have a story if we have him open it and look at it. And then on the next episode, we'll have a story.
There you go.
Yeah.
So El Yucateco, your sauces are in the hands of the great Rob Van Dam.
That's right.
And we'd like to thank Salt 7.
Have you done float therapy?
Yes.
Mm-mm.
Oh, you need to do it.
What is it?
One of our sponsors. You get in it's like sensory deprivation / float therapy. You get in highly salinated water that's at body temperature. And there's no sound, no light.
Right, but you're enclosed in.
And then it starts to become, you can't tell the air from the water, and it feels like you're floating.
And you kind of.
It's really good on your muscles.
Really like therapeutic relaxing. On your muscles. Like your brain is forced to go to weird places because it's completely still in the tank, and you start to, like, you literally can't tell where the water is and where the air is and where your body is. And
I feel like I would get claustrophobic.
No, that's what people say.
I thought that same thing.
It seems like a bigger space than it is.
Yeah, can't tell. Like, literally, I pushed off the top of the tank where my head was.
I'm getting
at.
Claustrophobic thinking about it right now.
I mean, it felt like it took. He's gonna pass out.
Well, it's
hard to breathe. Like, my breathing.
Shut up.
My breathing is restricted right now.
The tank's about a 3x3 box. Yeah, and you get in there.
the one in Bakersfield is actually like super state of the art Salt 7 that we float at, and the tanks are
6x7 by 10.
So you're not even. I mean, you're just, and like I said, the space disappears.
Dave fits in there.
Yeah, so I fit in there, and it's like no problems whatsoever. Because I know there's some in LA, but the next time you blow through Bakersfield, we'll have to get you in, because it's a cool experience.
Float on, bro.
Yeah. And I hear that some people float after they've smoked because it enhances the float effect.
Yeah.
So I was just curious if you ever tried it. But if next time you're in Baco, we'll have to we'll get you into Salt 7.
And since you don't have to pay for it, if you freak out, you get out.
That's right. Yeah. You just fucking get out. Peace.
Do people in Bakersfield call it Baker for short?
Baco.
No, they call it Baco.
Baco, and I have Baco. That annoys me.
Yeah. Because there is a Baker.
Yeah, Baker's
Baker. Baker,
yeah,
Baker California.
Yeah. Yeah. I think even people in Bakersfield look down on Baker.
And everybody else looks down on Bakersfield.
Right, right. I think that's it.
We got, what else?
Dark Side
Graphics. Digital Creations. Want to thank them. Dark Side Graphics. Punky Brewster over there for doing all our shirts and mugs and what stuff.
Chipotle, if you want to sponsor us.
Yeah, you're more than welcome to sponsor us, Chipotle. Yeah. We got some.
And printdirtcheap.com. You can use code SOFAKING and save 10% on printdirtcheap.com.
Yep.
And that's it. I want to thank Rob Van Dam. Is there anything else you want to add? Are you good?
I'm not into math. Do you want to add anything?
Seven.
All right, I'll add four. I'll raise your four.
Okay, shit.
Seven, eight, nine. That's 11.
Okay.
Dude, that's counting on
you
my
guys
fingers.
Ever listen to Howard Stern?
I have Sirius.
So. Every time it comes to math, like, he has to do that. And it's so often that I wonder if that's like,
it's
I believe
real
it.
Or if
like,
he's doing it. Yeah.
It's so bad that I'm like, I believe it. Like,
some people have math anxiety really bad. And when you get
as soon as you throw out some numbers,
blank. Yeah. People just go blank.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the one question. Like, if anyone, said, any question you want to ask him? No, I'd probably ask him, like, you ever thought you're gay since you're so obsessed with penises? But that'd probably be the question.
That's a good one, though. That is.
I don't really care. So one or the other.
One or the other. All right. Well, that's it. Thanks for listening, and don't be retarded.
cheese.